Hell yeah.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Detail the best gaming podcast in the world.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Gaming Guru Podcast. We've taken a little break. We come back refreshed with all sorts of cool topics to talk about. And boy, do we have an interesting one for you today. We're talking all about digital rights for gamers. I know it might sound super complicated and legal-like and the likes, but with me, as always, is Tim, and we're going to dissect this topic and discuss what exactly are your rights as an owner of digital products. Tim, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I am good. And so, you know, we're living in a digital age. We got digital consoles coming out with near-on zero disk drives, online storefronts barricading themselves off from competition and subscription models, the house down, trying to outdo the last.
Yep.
I feel like we're getting an increasingly raw deal for maintaining the games that we buy. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we need to ask what rights we have to those games and how can we preserve those rights that we hold as consumers, as well as the games that we own, both physical and digital, and hopefully archive these games for future generations.
Cool. I think it's a good summary. I think a good place to start from would be discussing, I guess, how we got to this point. So, you know, let's dial it back to the days of even having access to games. So remember, gaming would have come out of the arcade space first and foremost, where, you know, kids would play their, you know, 20 cent piece or whatever to play on the arcade, knowing full well that they don't own the cabinet. You know, they might consider themselves the owner for that, you know, between 30 seconds and half an hour, depending on how good they are at the game. But once that credit had run out, they leave and someone else steps in. And you know, now in a COVID world, I'm thinking of the incredibly unsanitary factor of kind of arcade machines and whatever exactly people, and they're certainly not cleaning their hands in between. But anyway, that's subject for another podcast. But essentially, usage done. Move right. A little bit forward, we go to the console era and we go, those same games that you have at a cabinet are now in your home and you buy a copy of the game and it is yours to use. As long as you have a machine to play it on and you have that disc, you can play it. Now we transport ourselves even to now. We go, you still have consoles, you still have hardware, PCs, whatever that you've paid for, but you don't really have a disc anymore. In fact, like you were saying, disc drives on consoles are becoming a thing of the past. The latest PlayStations and Xboxes all have kind of a discless options, you know, as we move forward. And so a future of, or even a present of, completely digital games is upon us. And so especially if we add into that mix games that, you know, you don't even pay for. You know, take a game like a Fortnite or an Apex Legends, where you download the game, you play it on your hardware, but essentially if they decide to, you know, just shut down the game, you have access to nothing. You can't play it offline. You have to play it on a server. And so you get the situation going, when you play Fortnite or when you play Apex, what exactly do you own? I mean, obviously you've got the cosmetic items, so you spend money to own. Yeah, I'm going to use own, you know, in inverted commas if you can hear it. But like, what does owning these skins even mean? What happens when the server shuts down? Do they give you, what, NFTs, electronic picture versions of your skins that you bought?
You can frame and
100%. Like, do you get
all your gold skins?
Yeah. Do you get credit for it? Especially, you know, Fortnite as a game it's been around for several years and it keeps updating, but it's still essentially the same game. But what happens when Fortnite 2 comes out? What happens when Dota 3 comes out? You know, you look at something like a Call of Duty that has a version every year. What happens when those skins kind of, you know, they don't transfer to the next version of the game, especially since the games, especially in this from the iterative versions every year, not talking about Warzone as a service, those games are very different every year. You know, they're different producers. It's basically just the title Call of Duty that keeps them similar. it's World War II, then it's future and space, and then it's boots on the ground, then it's jetpacks. Like, those skins are not exactly transferable. So one starts wondering, what am I pumping all this money into if I don't even own the thing?
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe some COD players already be used to this, or maybe there's an element of the strategy that's actually designed to wear players down, in that they understand that after a year or so, all the thousands of rands that they've put into their skins will just be lost. And that's just a part of, I guess you'd call it the, that's just one of the hazards of being a COD player, you know? Yeah. Like, and they ease us into these things over time as well. Like, you know, it didn't happen overnight, but we've gotten to a point now where this is becoming an issue. And it's like the playing field's kind of like shifted underneath our feet over the last like decade. Mm. You know, I still have a Sega Mega Drive here in my office, like sitting at the back. Uh-huh. And, you know, I can take out one of those cartridges, you know, turn it upside down and give it a good blow, like back and forth, get all the dust out there. And I might need to like turn that machine on and off a few times, but it will work.
Yeah.
And I will be able to play that game. And like, I think that's the big difference between where we've been and like where we are now, where things are in a bit more of a gray area.
Mm. I think what's interesting is the different variations on the financing model or the ownership model. They feel like they're all clashing and becoming this kind of smorgasbord where people are like picking and choosing the things they like and don't like about it. When I say people, I mean the developers themselves or the distributors, mm-hmm. because we're certainly not getting a choice. Yeah, if you take original ownership model one, which is you buy a game, you own the game, as long as you can play it, you can play it. Then you go ownership two, subscription model exclusively, as in you cannot play anything unless you subscribe, to number three, where you can play this game, but all the shiny stuff, all the skins and the added benefits, those are for people who pay. They feel like they're all kind of clashing in the middle. And then you add the mix on top of that, which is a subscription model like Games Pass, which goes, you know, as long as you're paying, you can keep playing and have access to all the stuff in the games. But inside those games, they all have their own individual DLCs and in-app purchase and all that. But when you stop paying Games Pass, you not only lose access to the game inherently because of that, you lose access to all the DLC that you bought within those games. So, you know, right. Layers upon layers of ownership. And so it starts feeling like we're almost back at the arcade, where you are, instead of playing the, you know, arcade cabinet owner at your local cafe or whatever, or corner store, you are paying a massive corporation to go, can I play my character for a couple of minutes, you know, minutes being months or years or whatever, but like, can I have access to it, knowing full well that when the credit runs out, you know, you leave and hopefully someone washes their hands and they, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought of that, like, does it mean as well that if a certain point of lapsing that your stuff could be deleted from a server? Because right. I mean, in game, we're talking about a space where access or like space on servers will be limited. You know, right now it's a case of going, yeah, cool, if your subscription lapses, your stuff's still on there, because if you then pay again, you'll be back to the point as if you had been, you know, paying the whole time. So your thousands of rands with the skins, you stop paying, you don't have access, then you come back a couple of years later, maybe you went on a 1 year sabbatical into the, you know, Buddhist monastery or something, you came back, saw the light, realized that gaming is the way, the truth and the light, came back, paid your subscription, and there are your Fortnite skins, and you're ready to go to find true centered oneness and eternal peace within Fortnite. What if they go, oh, sorry, you were gone for a year, so we deleted your stuff or sold it back on the market to someone else at like half the price, you know, some sort of like bank reclamation, you know, auction sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's probably in the terms of service somewhere. I think at the moment, because the product's all digital, there's no this real need to sell off your assets. The case of going, we're just going to delete your ones and zeros and, you know.
Yeah, this actually reminds me of something that happened to me with my my Path of Exile account. Mm-hmm. So for people who like listen to this podcast, I used to play a lot of Path of Exile, and I had like quite a lot of packs. It's mostly a free-to-play game, but the packs are quite expensive. And there's a lot of cool shit in those packs, and I bought quite a few. I've put quite a few thousands of rands into that game, like, I'm not going to lie. But I stopped playing on PC because my PC was giving issues and the performance wasn't so rad. and I wanted to switch over and start playing the PS4 version of the game, but I could not access my account, the account that I had set up with Grandia Games. I'd have to make a new account for PS4. And so I haven't got any access to all my skins. So I just have this bland, ugly character with no cool, flashy shirt. And it's actually, I didn't play the last two seasons, probably because of that.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, it's stuff that I own, but I can't access playing through another platform.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as you were talking, I was thinking about, for example, my Hearthstone collection. You know, that is years and thousands of rands of cards I've collected that, you know, what if I stop playing for long enough, they could just go, cool, well, you don't have access to your account. They kind of do it inherently by the fact that cards go out of standard and into wild, every 2 years. So cool, you've got all the cards to go play wild, but like all the new cards you don't have access to. You'd have to grind gold or pay money to basically have a meta relevant playable deck again. So yeah, I mean, there are lots of different ways things are not stacked in our favor. And I think the one thing that kind of highlighted this a lot was the recent closure and unclosure of PSP and PS3 and the PS Vita stores, lots of PSs there. And basically what Sony tried to do is they went, cool, we're closing the PlayStation 3 and PS Vita stores, meaning you will not be able to buy any of those games digitally. I presume it also meant you wouldn't be able to update those games, you know, in terms of if you had a base installation and you needed the latest update, you wouldn't be able to do that. I'm not sure if it meant if you have those games in your library, you could still download them. That I wasn't sure about. But I mean, imagine a situation where, for example, you're given that ultimatum and it's a case of you have to download all that content that you own in the cloud, that you know that you're always told is so protected, downloaded it onto some sort of physical medium, even if it is just a flash drive or whatever, so that you have access to the games that you paid your hard-earned money for.
I actually looked this up. Yeah. So someone tried to test it with PS3. I think you... even if they backed up their entire library to like an external hard drive, when you plug that hard drive into the PS3, it still tries to do that like digital handshake.
Yeah.
And it just tries to reformat.
Cool.
This is not a like original PS3. Like, let's just reformat that shit and just dump it all. So it's very difficult. There isn't currently a way, I don't think, to like back up those things without actually having that server, because
asterisk legally.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that this is where we need to get like a little bit technical, because it all comes down to a couple of parts that are inside the PS3, PS4. It's a little lithium battery. It's the CMOS battery. And if anyone has had issues with it before, they know that if something happens to your CMOS battery, your console is basically a brick. It's a little lithium battery that at some point it will die. It has an expiration date on it, and it keeps the console's internal clock going. And when you turn that console on, it syncs up to the servers and it does a digital handshake with the server to verify what accounts are connected to that console, and also what digital downloads you have currently attached to your account. So if there are no servers, then there's no handshake, which means there's no console, which means there's no content, no account, no games. Every game that you've ever owned on that system is now dead. You cannot access it if they were all digital. So yeah, it looks like some people have tried to back these things up and it just wouldn't work. Yeah, so it's not just for digital games. I think with PS4 now, it's all games. Okay. So whether you have a physical disc or otherwise, for whatever reason, your console can't perform this digital handshake with the PS servers, it literally spits your disc out.
Okay. And do you know if you can still play at least completely offline? You know, I mean, we've obviously a situation in South Africa where your internet's down. A lot of games will go, you know, especially if it's a single player game, it won't allow you to play the online features, but you'll still be able to play the offline game. Are you certain if that would also be shut down? Or is it just a case of like, you wouldn't be able to update, you wouldn't be able to play the online?
Yeah, I'm sure you'll run into, I think there's no like one shoe fits all kind of scenario, because a lot of the way that these games are being removed from stores happens differently. In some cases, if they're like a popular PS4 title, or let's say a popular PS1, PS2 title, that was, they'll resell it as part of a collection, you know, and upscale that, or have it as some type of collection, or they will sell it to you in, you know, from another, in terms of another subscription, like PS Now, for instance, where a lot of these games are being added there.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the future for all the stuff is going, you just have to buy the stuff again for a new license. You know, you kind of compare it to anyone who bought a movie on VHS and then bought it on DVD and then bought it on Blu-ray and then bought it on the cloud for, you know, Apple TV or whatever. It's a case like, I'm glad you're a fan of the movie and want four copies of it, but you're actually just doing it to be able to watch your movie, really, exactly. Because you don't have a VHS player or a DVD player anymore. I mean, the other day I tried to play a DVD on the PlayStation and it kind of just went, no. And it's like, just doesn't do DVDs anymore. They only do Blu-rays or newer.
It just decided no.
Yeah. it's like I could have sworn a PS5 would have been able to play a DVD and just, nah, didn't want to. Look, it might have been that, you know, I know that there's a lot of software as well on DVDs where the newer versions, like, I don't know if you can even buy DVDs now, but I'm sure if you bought the latest DVDs now, it all comes with like the latest, whatever, firmware and all that comes with it. But it was a case of going, okay, cool. Well, I guess I can't watch that DVD. And now that laptops don't have disk drives anymore, it's also like, where the heck am I supposed to watch this thing? So, I guess... It is scary because, you know, we go back to that PS3, PS Vita store closing, is you're going, there is an expectation as to when things are going to become redundant. So, I mean, if we use the PlayStation example, no one is screaming about like PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 1, you know, no longer being available unless you've got the discs. So at the moment, it's just that the outrage line is PS Vita, PS3. But I mean, what, in 10 years time when we had the PlayStation 7, if consoles are still around, would people still be bleating about the PS3s no longer being playable? You know, it's like, what is the line? So yeah, it feels like that is a theme. PlayStation or Sony are going to try and pull old digital storefronts, but like, what's the line? Do they need to pay us back, give us credits? You know, is there some sort of soft rollout where you've got to like reduce the access of some of the titles? You know, we've chosen the worst performing 200 titles and those are being removed, but we've kept like the top 100 and then we slowly phase out. Like, how do we go about this? Because I think people do know this is going to happen. It's just, you know, how long is that case? I mean, I'll use an example someone shared online where they bought a movie on the Apple Store, whatever, and they wanted to play it. And then they got this disclaimer saying essentially the rights to this game or this movie at least are no longer held by the same person you bought the rights through. So for example, you bought through XYZ company and then that company decided not to renew its license for that game, that movie, and now sold it on to someone else, or no one owns the rights to this movie in your area anymore, and so therefore you don't have the rights either. And so it's like, oh, okay, cool, so I can't watch the movie that I bought from this storefront that I'm trying to watch on the storefront right now. No, you can't, because in this region that person doesn't have the rights anymore. Oh, okay, cool. Like, it's not like you can negotiate that contract. Yeah. You know, it's not like, oh, okay, cool, we're going to tell everyone who lost access to the movies, like, hey, listen, you can appeal or you can ask for rights to be transferred. It's just gone.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's difficult to compare like the PS1. Maybe PS2 era, because as far as I know, the hardware in those consoles, I mean, you can still put those discs in and they'll still work. Mm-hmm. I think that was pre like day one patches being like mainstream.
Those are the days when patches you used to get on like PlayStation Magazine, where it'd be like, you would get the game and then to patch it, because there was very little internet, you would have to get one of the like official magazines that had like a patch on it. And put that in your disk to like install it. It was a weird time.
Yeah. So but that's also the biggest at least one of the big parts of this like PS3 kind of store shutdown story. So, you know, a lot of the games that people are complaining about are like mostly these indie titles. They're not first party titles from Sony and stuff that's a bit more niche. You know, not all of us will be, you know, crying about these games, but there definitely are people who are. And in some cases, the developers have said, look, you don't have access through that store, but, you know, if you contact us, we'll give you a key and you can download it from Steam. And so, you know, people are trying to find their, you know, certain ways around these. But, you know, think about, you know, every game you've ever had to download a day one patch for.
Yeah.
So like all those patches are now disappearing from PS3. And a lot of these games, you know, once you boot them up, let's say, okay, you're not online, you can't connect to the store, please try and connect. Or then you do connect and it says, this game is out of date, please download the day one patch. And you go and the patch isn't there. So yeah. Like already you're running into several walls to actually try and play this like outdated game offline on your current system.
Yeah.
So there will come a day when like that's going to happen for like PS4 players as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that horizon is going to keep shifting. I think the backlash from consumers has protected that horizon being PS3. But yeah, I mean, eventually that rising tide will swallow PS3 and then PS4 will be next and PS5. And, you know, that's the expectation. Yeah,
and, you know, the Nintendo fans will be no stranger to this because the Wii and Wii shops closed, the Wii and Wii U shops closed down in 2019. Mm. And there was a huge amount of games that were like just lost to history, can never be downloaded again. And the Switch and Wii U shops are not compatible at this time. So like there isn't a roadmap of any of those games like coming back to Nintendo in the future.
But that's just because they re-released them. That's Nintendo's model, right? They just keep re-releasing the same games for a new generation. That's how they make money. How many Mario's are remakes? I mean, the latest, Mario All-Stars was literally just like, we'll take a Mario 64, one from the GameCube and one, I think, from the Wii and just put them on Switch. New game, full price. Here we go.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, PC players obviously have a bit more option because, you know, you've got developers who have given, for example, like Steam codes and, you know, they're given other ways of having access to your game. But it does beg a question about things like emulators.
Right.
You know, I remember that obviously emulator has been around for a long time and you can, you know, right now download an emulator and get all those like 16-bit and 8-bit games that you played as a kid free. I'll use, you know, inverted commas there. But the disclaimer was always, if you have these games, then what you're doing is not like piracy. I don't know if that's a gray area for people to sleep better at night, but it kind of was the case of going,
hey man, you wouldn't steal a handbag.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't steal a quarry. You're like, so here it's, a case of going, you have the cartridge, you've got the original cartridge, Super Mario 3, but you don't have the Super Nintendo system to be able to play it on. Like, why would you not be able to play this game on computer? You know, so you download the emulator, play the game. If SWAT team storms in, you show them the receipt and the cartridge and go, checkmate, cops, I can play this game in peace on my PC, you know? So, you know, the emulation option does give PC players another way, I suppose, around things.
Yeah, so I think that this subscription model, the pay-to-play, pay-for-access, is really where we're at the moment. And it looks like this is the direction that things are going in. And a lot of, you know, these storefronts look at, it obviously doesn't make sense for them to stay online forever. Like at some point they need to shut down and go offline. But, you know, what will then be the steps to like mitigate the fallout there? Because, you know, Sony's backtracked now on this Vita and PS3 store closure because of the backlash that they got, rightly so, because it was very much like it was just a bit of a steep cliff. There wasn't really any kind of support then given to the players who, you know, maybe they assume no one was playing these games, right? But clearly there are people who still care about these games, play them, want to have them archived for future reference.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's just like co-opting, like a cake and eat it situation where you're going, they're seeing the stats, nobody is playing these games. And then they go, cool, we're going to close it. And all of a sudden people are like, no, no, my favorite games. I love them. And they start downloading and they're like, look at me. I'm streaming all my favorite games. And the minute they're like, okay, we're not closing the store, like, at least I have access to too much. It's the way I feel, honestly, with people making a big deal about backwards compatibility. Like, right. Oh, yeah, I'm going to play my backwards compatibility games. You're like, do you really? Like, in all honesty, I might dip into a game once in a while, but it's certainly not taking, like, any kind of massive chunk out of my gameplay where I'm going, time to go back to a 10-year-old game to play that again. Like, no, this has been remastered. I'm not going to play it again. So I think people make a bigger deal about that. Also, I'm sure, like I was saying about co-opting, I've got no stake in the PS Vita thing. I don't own one. I don't own a PS3. But if there are other people complaining who go like, hey, guys, retweet this so that Sony doesn't shut down our store. I'm like, yeah, I'll retweet it. Like, cool. Like, if they, you know, if it's going to make other people who that is all the games that they have, and if it closes, that is going to be a major impact, and one little retweet from me makes a difference, then sure. And so then Sony goes, wow, look how much support not closing the store is getting. Meanwhile, it's like only 10% of that actually are going to be impacted by that decision. So, you know, sometimes it's just people making a lot of noise despite the fact that they, it's something we've seen before with some of these payment plans in general. How come everyone complains about DLC, everyone complains about microtransactions, and yet we see every month the games that make the most amount of money are the games that have microtransactions, which tells me that either some people are making an over-indexed amount of noise, or people just like to complain and still do the thing. So they're going like, I like microtransactions because I want to buy Rambo skins for my Call of Duty guy, but like, I feel
personally attacked.
I also just want to complain about microtransactions because it's cool. Nobody wants to be the guy who's like, you know what? I'm a big fan of microtransactions. I think there should be more of them. And in fact, if they could cost more too, you know, I want to feel like there's gravitas behind my purchase. Like, nobody wants to be that guy.
What is going to happen to my Rambo skin, guys? That's what I want to know. Exactly. What's going to happen to my Rambo skin? But I think that for Sony, and I think for a lot of these digital storefronts, the thing that is probably going to help protect consumers in the long run in terms of the longevity of and the shelf life of these games will be democratizing the stores. You know, Sony's been taken to task for the fact that they're the only ones where you can get certain games from. They've got a license. They hold the rights to sell it on their platform. They can sell it for whatever price they want. But the fact that you can't get it somewhere else means your consumer choice is drilled down to like this funnel. And your access to that game lives and dies at the whim of, you know, Sony keeping the doors open for us.
And that's not that much of an issue while traditional retail is still a thing.
Exactly.
But the day that they pull the plug on that, and the only way you can get the latest God of War is from the PSN store only. There's not a physical copy. There's no other way. You can't buy it or rent it from a friend or do anything except buy it from that. Then that's 100% a monopoly. Like, there's no other way of looking at it. And so I think at the moment, their monopoly case might, you know, have a leg to stand on the fact they're going, oh, if you don't like it, go buy in retail. And you're like, oh, yeah, well, you're right. I can go buy in retail, but and when that goes away,
but then your like console is a digital console, so you can't go buy a disc.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
or they haven't even printed a disc for this, like, you know, new God of War 8 or whatever. You know, it's you either have to. There needs to be like competition in like the digital storefront space.
Yeah.
You know, where that's kind of like where things have been with Steam and kind of PC gaming for a little while.
Yeah.
And there's still a market for like buying and selling keys, you know, key resellers. And I think like this leads into like, I guess the next sort of big development in the space would be this case against Valve from a French court. From a French consumer rights company that are taking Valve to task. Saying that since they don't actually sell you a subscription and it sells you a product license or product key, Valve must then allow users to basically do what they want with their purchase, with that key, whether that is, you know, resell it off to someone else or also reimburse you know, users for any currency that's left in their Steam wallets after their account is closed, which it seems like it should be a legit thing, right? But it literally only just happened now. Like up until a couple of weeks ago, months ago, Steam was just putting that money right into their pockets. Doesn't matter how much cash is left in your Steam wallet, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's almost going to get to the point where you almost have like a Netflix sort of setup where you're going, you buy multiple accounts. Where you're going like, you know, you get these like family accounts where five people can access your games. So you're going, okay, cool. We'll be less punitive on like which games you can, you know, at the moment, like you have your access to the 30 games that you've bought and all that. But like technically you're the only one who has access. If someone else logs in, they need to log onto their Steam and play their games. Right. Where you almost get to the point of going, no, I've bought a family account to Steam and I can give three other people the access to my Steam account so they can play. So, you know, might be another way around like softening that blow of, you know, the rights to certain licenses. And I mean, the other thing we haven't even spoke about is even on, you know, we're talking about the console iterations make certain games unplayable because of backwards compatibility. But have you even tried playing older games even on Steam with newer hardware? Some of them become unplayable because of like how fast computers have gotten. I remember trying to replay Syndicate. I don't know if you remember the old top-down. It's like you basically have this. It's a futuristic kind of dystopian future Matrix style where you have these agents who go in and try and basically mow down the enemy.
Right.
But it's done like a corporate espionage sort of way. So instead of armies, it's all kind of corporate armies and that. Try to play that game. My PC was so fast that the game just sped along. Like it was almost unplayable with like, you know, the in-game clock was just going mile a minute and it's just like, okay, cool, can't play this. But it's a case of going, it's still on PC, but what PCs were 10 years ago versus what they are now is, you know, almost as if they're different consoles and different kind of architecture. So, I mean, there's even that. Is there a point where, yeah, cool, you've got license to these games, but unless you're running a Pentium 3, you know, we play this game anymore
with 512 megabytes of RAM
booted up
for the skies, boy.
Yeah, booted up from your floppy disk, like for the extra RAM. Yeah, so yeah, definitely showing my age there. But yeah, I think the key thing at the moment is we're in this precarious place that's almost just waiting for some sort of big fallout. We saw it a little bit with the PS3 PSV closure kind of scare. But, you know, you kind of see the next couple of things will be, what about, you know, Games Pass has been this kind of all-around good guy giving people access to games. What about when they remove certain games from Games Pass? So you go, what about all my progress in the game? That's just the simple one.
Like, all my save files.
They're like, cool, I know we used to have whatever, Doom Eternal on here. We now no longer do. So if you want to play the game now, you got to buy it. Oh, okay, cool. So instead of, you know, it actually being the subscription service, it's now just like a very prolonged demo or trial version, you know? And it's less of an issue with things like Doom, but what if it's a game like Skyrim, you know, where you might have sunk 1,000 hours into the game and it's a lifestyle more than anything, at which point I'd say you should probably buy the game, but, you know, maybe more so than just your $10 a month rental, but since you clearly enjoy it. But it is one of the things of going, you've changed the rules midway. I think that's what we're almost waiting for, is like someone to just push the contract a little bit too far in terms of what users have signed up for versus what they're actually getting.
Yeah, but I think this is kind of generally where I think consumers and gamers find themselves. Like, we've signed up to these subscription models that do change over time, and they do update and change the way they do things on a dime. But we've already signed up to that. You know, they're not gonna. If the changes are dramatic, they might update the end unit license agreement and make you like click yes, I agree again, even though you've already paid. Right? They're not. You know, and if you clicked, I don't agree, then you've opted out and you no longer have access to all those games and or apps that you've put all this time and energy and money into.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on a different note, but similar ideas, recently YouTube updated its terms of service where they can monetize any content. Now, that's important because if you're not on the partner program, so for example, you haven't reached their, I think it's 4,000 hours of watch content and you haven't got at least 1,000 subs, so you're in that like growth stage, they can put ads on your stuff. You're just not getting any of the revenue from it.
Sure.
And also, if they decide that you're demonetized for whatever contract, I mean, copyright breach or, you know, whatever the reasons are, they can still put ads on. They can still make money from selling that ad space. You just don't get any. So it's sure. like, it's that sort of stuff where you're going, cool, you change the rules. If I opt out, you're going, cool, then we never play ads on your content. And you're basically just doing this for the love of making content, which, you know, fair enough, a lot of people do. But if you're a life, if you're a kind of career YouTuber, you're not only doing it for the love of creating content, you're trying to make money from this.
Mm.
And now the fact that YouTube can still go, yeah, we're still going to make money from your super popular content, you're just not going to, is, yeah, it's exactly what you're talking about. You change the rules.
But we've signed up for a service that's, you know, we give them the power to change the rules as they go along. Yeah. And they do this constantly, you know, testing stuff, you know, taking two steps forward and then one step back when like there's backlash, yeah. and then maybe another two steps forward and one step back.
Yeah.
You know?
And sometimes it's also in the wording, like, you know, they use the words like the PS3 and PS Vita stores are closing down. They're like, that is very like line in the sand. But if it were one of those, like, we are, I don't know, like dialing back on the amount of available content for PS3 users based on rate of sale, you'd be like, oh, okay, cool. That's probably not going to cause as much of a hissy fit, but it's still going to cause issues if people go into the terms and conditions and what that actually means. So yeah, very, very hectic. Yeah, it's a sticky topic, a thorny one, and certainly one that we're all going to want to keep our eyes on and ears and all our senses to check how things are going. I think as long as there's enough of a power play between the different subscription models, there's definitely going to be that healthy competitive tension. We already chatted about how monopolies are dying in this space and how everyone's kind of like, while they are creating fences and they're kind of own internal monopolies, there's enough competition from competitive products that yeah. that at least things are staying a bit safe. And, you know, as long as there is this sort of ear to the consumer where, you know, Sony can decide to close a store and, you know, its consumers can go, nope. And they go, right, that was just an April Fool's joke. We were not actually doing that. We are keeping them open until we try again next April 1st. Yeah. I think this space, as long as consumers are being heard, we can be thankful, you know, compared to some other places where consumers are not heard. I think it's one mm-hmm. of the spaces where gamers are quite vocal, and I think developers and distributors listen to those voices, and they are at least heard. So we can be thankful for that in the meantime. But what that means for your rights as a digital content owner, does this mean quickly write everything to disk and, you know, hoard it all? You know, in your underground bunker, who knows? Does it mean having to stay up to date with the latest console and software all the time and just kind of going c'est la vie about any treasured memories? Because, you know, hopefully they'll do a remastered version in 10 years and I'll buy that again too.
Does it mean NFTs for all my COD skins?
Yeah, exactly.
I hope so.
Your
so
NFT.
I can keep them on the wall and show my grandkids one day.
Exactly.
Look at this gold skin that your grandfather earned for the AMAX 56 Cup.
Grandpa, what does owning a game mean? Like, how does that even work? I mean, I still have to explain to my kid about buying an album just because I liked one song. I don't know how I'm still going to explain that. Anyway, it's been a great podcast. Thanks for being on as always, Tim. If you've got any questions, guys, please do drop us a line on Twitter at Guru_podcast or at the Gareth Woods or at Tim and a Fish. We will be back next time with another juicy topic discussing some more cool stuff about gaming, the world of gaming, and what it is to be a gamer. Until next time, go out and play some games.